Rapkin and Wyatt, sorry, I don't know your last name.
Yeah, Beck.
Wyatt Beck. Thank you.
Good morning. Thanks for being here. Hey, Ziv, do you want to just confirm that all of the mics are working? For the online? Yeah? Okay, good. Okay. I've been working on Yen Loans for 3 years. The first year was due diligence. The second year was getting licensed. That took almost a year. We got our, it's called Kashikingyo Menkyo, in fall of 2024. And then we had to go out and raise money. And that took another year. That took another year to raise both equity and debt, because we're in the business of lending money. We need to borrow money. And we settled our first loan on January 30th. Since then, we've done six loans total. We've got another two settling this week. And we've got a decent pipeline for May and the rest of the summer. So it's an exciting time to be presenting here. I don't want to just read the presentation, but I will, and this will be available for anyone who wants it. But as mentioned, we are licensed, so you should feel take some confidence in that.
My PC audio, I think, is on, which is screwing you. No, it's not. Sorry, give me a second. Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. No.
Sorry.
Carry on. And it just ignore me completely.
Sorry. Okay. In terms of market context, I think it's safe to say that everyone here likes Japan, so I don't really need to sell you on the opportunity. But as a kind of just general point, we've definitely seen an uptick in interest in Japan real estate and specifically our product. And I think there are a few things driving that. First of all, Japan is awesome, as I mentioned. Also, dollar yen being at 160 means that foreigners look at property, and although it has risen in yen terms, it still looks quite reasonable versus other metropolises. I should also mention that I'm American, and regardless of your politics, the U.S. right now is very polarized, and Japan just, I think to many people, seems like a very clean, safe, and stable place. So yeah, there's a lot of interest in it. I should say up front that we can't compete on interest rate with Japanese banks, so it's a tough kind of thing to market, but I just say, look, anyone who can access direct financing from a Japanese bank at 2% or 1% should do that. We're lending at TIBOR, which is a floating rate, plus 3.5%. TIBOR is now at around 0.9, so our all-in cost is around 4.4%, which, the reception we get is usually kind of very binary. It's either, wow, this is great, you guys can lend money at a rate which looks pretty reasonable, or some form of, no, like, you're in Japan, you should be able to borrow at 2%. So anyway, we can't compete with Japanese banks on rate, but we definitely can compete in terms of speed, flexibility, and ease of use. So on that point, we don't have any requirements for Japanese income verification or even Japanese income. You don't have to have a Japanese bank account. You don't need to have a visa. You don't even need to be a resident. You don't need to start up a Japanese company, and you don't need to be in Japan. Do you want to take this part?
Yeah, you can do that one. I'll start
okay.
From the next one.
So I've kind of gone through this, but this slide serves to show that we're very flexible, and we don't. So the top one I think is quite interesting. We do equity out refinancing, which in Japan is very rare. So we'll see. Although our rates are higher than what Japanese banks pay, we'll see people who have old mortgages from Japanese banks where their property has gone up and they've amortized the mortgage down. So, they may have, let's say as an example, maybe you bought a property for 100 million yen 10 years ago. It's now worth 200 million yen. And the mortgage is even lower. The mortgage is probably down to like 30 million yen now. And people want to access some of that equity. A Japanese bank will let you refinance. So for instance, if you had a loan with Mizuho and you could get a better rate from Resona, you can do that, but Resona won't let you take out cash. They'll only refinance the amount that you have in the original mortgage. We don't care about that. So, you know, on something like that, if we were to lend 50% and it's worth 200 now, we'd lend you 100. I think I kind of explained the other things here.
Okay, let me go over this one here.
Yeah, I think you need this too.
Okay, can you click that on? Okay, so I'll sort of present about the product itself. There's two very important points that I want to address right away. One, we can only finance condos or apartment units, no detached houses, no whole buildings at the moment. And the second thing is when it comes to LTV and how that works. So it's important to understand that the LTV is the loan amount is based on the appraised value of the property and not the purchase price. So there will be a difference between those two. and it really depends on the property. So just keep that in mind. The minimum loan amount, $15 million, all the way up to $525 million. As for the loan term, we can do a maximum of 35 years, but that's also dependent upon the age of the property. So if it's a 30-year-old property, so what the rule is we take 50 minus the age of the property. So if it's 30-year-old property, the max loan term is 20 years. And then as Mark explained earlier, the interest rate consists of two components, the TIBOR portion, which is floating, and then our spread, which is 3.5%. Another thing that might be of interest to property investors to increase your cash flow is we could offer interest-only loans for a maximum of 5 years. through the fees here. Okay, so we have a commitment fee of 220,000 yen, which includes consumption tax, and then there's also an appraisal fee of 110,000 yen. So when I get into the process, which is the next slide.
You should mention that.
Oh yeah, and then our loan origination fee of 2.2%, which is due upon settlement of the loan, so it's at settlement. So when we get to settlement, you'll be credited the loan amount, and then there's three debit items. One of them is the loan origination fee. The other is a principal and interest payment reserve, which is either 3 months or 6 months, depending on the type of use of the property. And then the last debit item would be the stamp duty, which depends on the size of the loan. to go over the process a little bit, we'll start off with an initial assessment. So we have a client intake form. It's one page, takes probably 10 minutes to fill out.
Can I jump in?
Yeah.
Just briefly, so to maybe simplify this, the way a kind of typical client interaction would start is, like, if someone reached out to us, we would, like, today we'd be talking to you, otherwise it could be by phone or email, but that would usually include you telling us what kind of property it is and us making sure that we could in fact finance it. So if you said you wanted to buy a teepee in Chiba, well, we don't finance teepees, so that's not gonna work. From that, then we would say, oh, this is something that we can finance, and you would have given us some color on who you are, what you do, what your income is, what kind of assets and liabilities you have. And from there, we would ask you to fill out the initial assessment form. So we want to make this as easy as possible for borrowers, and we don't want to waste your time or our time. So just, you know, for me personally, you know, having dealt with Japanese banks, the rate is great, but you don't get a lot of color along the way, and you can end up spending a lot of time and money kind of presenting things only for at the end they say, oh no, we can't do this. So we really want to avoid that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to pass this back to Wyatt, but the point is, after that kind of initial conversation about whether or not this is looks like it's something we're going to be able to do, then we would ask you to spend 10 to 15 minutes preparing this intake form.
Yeah, and then once we get the client intake form, then we do, so there's, it consists of two portions. The top portion is sort of about your finances. So what we need to know is what's your monthly net income and what are your monthly liabilities. From that, we do, it's called the DSR, debt serviceability ratio calculation, to figure out if how much leverage you could be eligible for. So that's the first portion of the client intake form. The second portion is about the property. So ideally, you've already identified a specific property that you're looking at, and we will do a valuation on that property, and then advise you of what the value comes back at, so you know how much leverage you could get on the property. If there's some people who just want to know, oh, how much could leverage could I get in general based off my finances, and then you know how much equity cash you have available to commit towards the purchase, but you haven't identified a property yet, that's fine. So just go ahead and you can submit it anyways, and we'll consult with you, and then you can go out and look for a few months or something for a property. So once we've completed the initial assessment, we've determined that you are financeable, the property fits within our mandate, the criteria, then we would advise you to go ahead and submit a loan application. So that's when we're going to send you an invoice for the commitment fee and the appraisal. And then there's two links we'll send you. One of them is the loan application itself, and the other link is your documents upload for all your KYC docs.
Okay. I think a key thing to mention here is we are not in the business of accepting application fees for loans we don't want to fund. That would annoy you, and that would be a waste of our time and your time. So the 220,000 yen application fee is, it's not small. He calls it a commitment fee. It's partly because we don't want to do the work of credit underwriting, which, by the way, we have lots of expenses for, unless you're really committed to doing it. But also, as I mentioned, this is when we start doing credit checks and running the numbers on our side. Some of that is outsourced, so there's a real cost to us. So just the last thing I'll say on this is we have yet to accept an application fee for a loan that we chose not to fund. So we've had people who applied that, the property traded away, or they bought, and I think they may come back. But the point is, we really don't want to be in business of annoying people by collecting application fees for something that we wouldn't fund. And in fact, I would be quite inclined to refund an application fee if it didn't happen, with the caveat that the way I look at the kind of the move from the intake form to the application is, when we say you should apply, it's you're highly likely to be approved as long as you are who you said you are. Right. So for instance, if you said, oh, I have a Charles Schwab account with $800,000 in it, and then when you document it, it only has 40K in it, that's not good. That's on you. So with all this, said about high likelihood of being approved, if we're asking you to submit the application, that is assuming that you haven't lied in the application process. And in the mortgage business, there are I think lots of examples of people who have kind of tried to say they had better finances than they really had.
Okay, so now once you've submitted your loan application, then the KYC process actually starts. So within 10 business days, we will have completed the whole credit underwrite and then provided you with formal loan approval, which comes in the form of a loan offer letter, where you indicate actually how much debt you want to receive at settlement, and then we move towards settlement. just a quick note, we can only do settlement on the second and fourth Thursdays of every month. Those are our designated drawdown dates. And then also at settlement, I mentioned it earlier, you will be credited the loan, and then there's those three debit items. So about 20 business days, well, exactly 20 business days prior to settlement is when we will determine the TIBOR portion of the interest rate. That's the floating portion. So we'll say, okay, at settlement, that's what the TIBOR portion is going to be. So now we can actually calculate the amortization schedule, and we'll create a debt side settlement statement for you, so you'll know exactly how much loan you'll receive at settlement. Okay, and then and then after settlement is just when you start making the payments. Okay, so we're going to go through three case studies for you. Are we okay on time? So this first case study, this was actually our first deal. So it's pretty exciting to go through. So here's sort of the profile of the borrower, an individual, non-resident, living in Hong Kong. Citizenship was Australian. So basically the purpose of the purchase was for to be owner-occupied. So the borrower was being relocated to Tokyo through his company, but it wasn't going to be until a few months off. So in the interim, he was going to run it as a short-term rental, as a MFA, monthly furnished apartment. And then if you can see the property itself, it's a really cool property. I like the property a lot.
You visited?
Yes. Yeah, I visited the property. I actually showed it to the client. His broker was on vacation, I guess. So, but it's a great property in Roppongi, probably 5 minutes from the station, and then another 5 minutes towards Tokyo Tower. So the purchase price was at just under 180. The appraisal came back at 134. Based off the intended type of use, he could have gone up to 50% LTV. He ended up taking out, I think, was it 67 or 60, yeah, something like that?
Maybe, yeah, it's worth mentioning.
Okay. Sure.
Mark, we need you to click that when you're talking. Click, not actually able to click.
Sorry. Oh, click this one. Sorry, hold on. So it's worth, this is something to highlight. So the appraisal came in at only 134 million yen, which frankly is kind of frustrating for most buyers. To be clear, the appraisal is outsourced to an appraisal company, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but appraisals are kind of inherently backward looking, and especially in this area, Minato-ku, kind of the central five wards, prices have gone like this over the last couple of years. And so this was a renovated apartment?
Yeah.
As well? Yeah, so it was a renovated apartment, which the appraisal companies give you very little credit for. So, you know, if I were the buyer and I wanted to max leverage out, I would be kind of frustrated that you know, the purchase price is 180 and the appraisal amount was 135. This guy didn't care that much because he only wanted to borrow, I think, kind of 60 to 70 million yen. I would say, in our experience, so in the central five wards of Tokyo, if the appraisal is around 80% of the purchase price, that's actually a decent outcome. And it's hard for us to kind of fight for it to be raised at all above that.
Also, one more thing to mention about the appraisals is we tend to see a wider margin between the appraised value and the list or market price of a property if it's a new development or getting into the luxury, ultra luxury space. There's more of a margin there, typically.
Okay. Talk about property management.
Okay, so yeah, property management, actually this is a very important point. So if you do not have a Japanese bank account, that's not a problem, we can still lend to you, but we will require that an approved property manager by us be appointed to handle your monthly P&I payments. So it would be pretty difficult if you have an offshore bank account and kind of impractical to keep sending us money each month. So we require a property manager be appointed to handle that. Okay, you want to talk about the next two?
Sure. So just to finish up on this one, this is our first loan. The application came in just before the holidays, so it took 57 days. Now, this guy wasn't that rushed. We can do it in less than 30 days, but this is just there to kind of show what a slow process looks like. Okay, this second case, we've called the low-touch, yield-hungry investor. This borrower was from China. I don't have to go through all of his income stuff, but I don't think he's ever been to Japan. I think the reason for his, so there's obviously lots of Chinese interest in Japanese real estate, and you know there's a kind of historical theme of Chinese wanting to get assets outside of China. So this guy didn't tell me that, but I'm pretty sure that's what's driving it. And the other thing that's driving it is the developer that sold it to them manages it as an Airbnb. So what that means is that the developer enters a long-term rental contract with the buyer, and then the developer runs it as an Airbnb. I'm kind of mixed thoughts on this. One, I don't think it would be possible for this guy to be managing his own Airbnb by himself from China. So we would definitely require that he has a property manager in place. The return he's getting is close to 7%, which I think if you were operating an Airbnb, you probably would be targeting something higher than that, maybe a net yield of 8 or 9%, maybe even higher. But the way it's structured, he's just got a long-term lease with the developer. Now, well, you may or may not find this interesting, but this, I feel, especially when you look at where the appraisal came in versus the purchase price. So it was appraised at 51.8 million yen versus the purchase price of 75 million yen. I think that this purchase price is somewhat inflated. And I think it's inflated the buyer is allowing it to be inflated because of the high rental income. What that means for us is there's a fair amount of kind of risk around what happens after the 2-year lease is up. Is this Airbnb operator going to continue to lease this property at that 7%? So the all-in yield of 6.57% looks somewhat attractive to me, but I think there's a chance that in the future that yield actually goes down. What I'm getting at is I understand the attraction of this investment, but it's probably not one that I would do, and it leaves us with kind of real risk to the operator. And so as the CEO of Yanloans, I'm willing to do some of this business with this operator, but I certainly wouldn't want to have them managing 25 apartments. This one's a bit faster. This was 42 days. How are we on time, Ziv? Okay, cool. Okay, this is an interesting one. A wealthy Japan resident from China, but he doesn't have PR. He has a job in Japan. I believe that the job was really just so that he can have a visa. I don't remember his salary, but it certainly wasn't high. And it certainly wasn't high enough to support a purchase price of 990 million yen. This borrower had a bunch of income-producing properties in China and Thailand, I think. Mm-hmm. And we got comfortable with them. We saw rental contracts on all of them. And so we were able to lend him 526 million yen. So that's actually our biggest loan. The appraisal came in, and this one, the appraisal actually came in very close, actually slightly above the purchase price. Mm-hmm. It had been on the market for 1.2 billion yen. Sorry about that. It had been on the market for 1.2 billion yen, but he was able to get a bit of a concession to such an effect that the appraisal actually came in higher than the purchase price. You know what I'm forgetting? I should have mentioned is in the scenario before, the low-touch yield-hungry investor, he actually opted to pay the extra 0.5% to only pay interest. So it's a pretty aggressive investment. So for this last one, yeah, it was 59 days to funding. I think a lot of that was actually on the borrower side. We could have done faster, but he couldn't get the required equity into Japan for a while. So I think that's it. I hope we haven't gone too fast or bored you. But at this point, we'd like to open it up to questions. I think he'll bring a mic over.
Thank you very much. Oh, sorry.
Hey, I'm Joe Mo from Hokkaido Hobby Homes. Quick question. I have two questions. The first one's quicker to answer, and the second one might take more time. But the first one is, are you able to do basically a line of credit so a potential buyer can just have that in their back pocket when they're ready to find a house, and then you can approve the house? And question number two is, why do they only allow you to loan on mansion?
Yeah, so we don't do a line of credit, but one, we would give you pre-approval, which many many sellers, especially dealing with foreigners, want to see, to see that you actually can buy it. So we do that all the time. In terms of, it's not a line of credit, but as I mentioned before, we do equity release. So people who, for instance, want to do a renovation or buy another property, if you have an unencumbered property, so a property without a mortgage, which fits our criteria, we'd be happy to let you do an equity release, and that'll be much cheaper than a HELOC or something you'd get in the US. On the second point, so we're a lending business. We borrow money to lend money. And the way that financiers behind us protect themselves is by being very clear about, I call it the sandbox. This is the sandbox that we're allowed to play in. And the sandbox is only condominiums. And I'm very aware that there would be lots of opportunities to land on houses and buildings. But we want to do that. I think we will be able to do that at some point in the future. But it's just worth mentioning that the required due diligence on a standalone structure is just totally different than a condo that, you know, sit, you know, especially one that's developed by a, you know, well-known builder. You don't have to worry about, you know, any of the construction. So we wanted to get off the ground as quickly as possible, and agreeing to this somewhat limited sandbox got us there. And fortunately, we have been able to expand. So we started with just Tokyo. In fact, we started with only the 23 wards of Tokyo. And then from April 1, we expanded to all of Tokyo, parts of Kanagawa, Osaka, Fukuoka, Nagoya, so and Sapporo. We're growing. I think there's a question here. Is
it? Yeah, hang on, sorry. I'll get the mic to you, but just one from the stream beforehand.
Okay.
Which one? What about the financing of buying whole buildings of condo and keeping one for own you? Okay, so I think that was just answered. Whole buildings are still not there, but when
let me just make one. So our financier has lets us approach them with, it's called regai in Japanese, so we're allowed to approach them for exceptional approval, but they've said only for loans that are bigger than a billion yen. So yeah, if you want to buy a 2 billion yen building, we should talk, but yeah.
Okay, by the way, I'm just curious, the 7% that you mentioned for the short-term stay property, was that cash on cash or 7%?
It was 6.57%, and that was cash on cash.
Cash on cash, okay, because I thought it was a bit too high for Tokyo if it was a...
It was an Osaka property as well.
Osaka. It was Osaka, but also this is, my point was, I view that as kind of inflated. My question is, what's going to, so the guy enters a two-year lease with the operator. 2 years from now, is that lease going to get renewed at the same level? I don't know. So that's how they effectively can mark up the property. Right. It's not a kind of business that I really like, but I understand why all parties are doing it.
It's kind of a fake yield calculation, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Okay. But if you deposit in U.S. bank, they give you more than 7% without any investment.
For fixed-term deposits.
Yeah.
Mm, fixed-term in the U.S. now is more like four.
Yeah.
But there's... Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
For the second case study, did you include the potential income in your calculations? You gave an income for the borrower, but did you include the potential income from the property? And if you did, how is that included? Like a percentage or something?
Yeah, so in the decision to lend, we look at all sources of debt and all sources of income. And in the second case, obviously he's getting that rental income. That's included in the DSR. In the third one, the billion yen apartment, the guy is going to live there. So. It would rent for a nice rent, but we can't count that.
So I take it your funds are coming from U.S. investors? No? Japanese?
So, I'll just be frank. So we have debt funding and we have equity.
Mm-hmm.
So the equity came from... So the initial equity came from mainly from me.
Mm-hmm.
And then... We got a 5 billion yen financing facility from a Japanese bank,
mm-hmm.
so they lend us money.
Mm-hmm.
They required that we go out and raise more equity, and we did that from a large fund in Hong Kong.
And are you required, like say for a U.S. citizen or any citizen, are you required to look at their worldwide portfolio holdings?
It's not required, but we do.
Okay.
Like I guess the whole opportunity for us, I think, like just stepping back from why I did this, is like I saw. By the way, this is not an original idea, but I realized like there are lots of people in Japan that can't access Japanese banks that are great credits.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're seeing more and more of them. People who come here who might have wealth they don't have a job in Japan, but they have some kind of job overseas.
Right.
A Japanese bank won't look at that.
Right.
Or they don't have assets in Japan, but they have an apartment building in New York. Mm-hmm. And so we're very comfortable with people not having anything in Japan. But the flip side is we're super focused on what assets and income and liabilities they have overseas.
And what is the rate? Is that fixed for a certain period of time or it floats every single month?
So it floats every single month. Mm-hmm. To make it easy, this is quite specific, but to make it easy, we calculate a fixed payment for 1 year, assuming the floating interest rate 20 days before the start of the loan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So we do this to make it easy for you. So for instance, you know you have to pay 360,000 yen each, mm-hmm. Each month.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the year, we do a look back, and we see what has actually happened to TIBOR. And according to what has happened to TIBOR, we will take that 360,000 yen payment and attribute more of it to repayment if TIBOR has gone down,
mm-hmm.
and less to interest. And we will attribute less of it to repayment and more to interest if TIBOR has gone up.
So you adjust the principal balance. You do an adjustment on the principal
balance.
Yes,
exactly.
Once a year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have a question. If people are not paying money for the mortgage, do you do foreclosures, or the foreclosures market existing in Tokyo or in Japan generally, so you can go on the auction and buy distressed houses? That's what it in US. You know.
Yep. So I hope we never have to answer that question. I hope for you and for me. but you're asking good questions. So I would actually, if you were to ask me, like, why haven't Japanese banks done this? One of the reasons is what you highlight, and it's specifically that foreclosing on people who are non-residents can be hard, and it's actually, they can be non-resident Japanese even. So it's not about race or passport. It's if the borrower is not in Japan, when you go to bankruptcy court, so let's say you defaulted on me, the first thing the bankruptcy court will say is, did you deliver proper notice of arrears and default? And if the guy's in Japan, there's a specific form of registered mail where I send it to you. It's effectively like serving someone, where it doesn't matter if you don't answer me, because I sent it to you. And in a bankruptcy court, it's called Nayo Shome, a bankruptcy court will say, I'll say to the bankruptcy court, yeah, we did this Nayo Shome, and they'll say, okay, you can sell it in the, it's called K-Buy, the foreclosure, the auction process. If the borrower is offshore, you don't have that path. Now, to me this is kind of moot, because we're only lending 50%. I think that the situation where you might ignore me is if I lent you 100%, right? Because then you're like, oh, it's kind of an option to pay Mark back. But now think about it. It's like you bought an apartment for 200 million yen. You put in 100 million yen. I'm pretty sure you're going to make the payments. But I'm also sure that if you have any issues, you're going to answer my phone call, right? So I see why Japanese banks are quite focused on this point. But I just, like, when I look at, so my partner in this business set up the same business in Australia. They've done more than 10,000 loans. Of 10,000 loans, they've had less than 20 defaults, and those defaults were usually around death. I think we're gonna have no defaults.
Two more questions, and then we have to finish. Sorry.
Earlier, you mentioned that you were borrowing yourselves money from banks. Are you also looking, for example, on repackaging the debt and selling that to investors?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in the overseas model of this business, that would be the exit for us. So with a Japanese financier, we probably don't need to do that. And the terms from the Japanese bank are like, well, they're very strict in what we can do, but the financial terms are decent. So we're not racing to do a securitization. If we had financed with a kind of typical, it's called a warehouse. So if we had financed with a typical financial warehouse, we would be under major pressure to securitize it, because the provider of the warehouse, they're only providing leverage for 1 or 2 years, and we're making 35-year loans. So we may do that in the future, but I feel, despite the rigidity, I do like our current financing, because we're not under major pressure to ramp up the business very fast and sell the risk.
Can you clarify the equity lending? Does that have the same mansion requirements on the product that you're lending?
Yeah, we can only, so right now we can only do Kubo Manchon, so condominiums.
Okay, and do you have a time frame potentially that you would lend on other products or not?
I don't want to overpromise. I think it's something like somewhere between, let's say, 9 months and 24 months out. But I also want to be frank that, given the due diligence requirements, I think our minimum loan amounts have to go up, just because the amount of work required on each loan will go up a lot, rather than as compared to a condo.
Just to clarify, the collateral, the asset needs to be a condo, but the loan can be for any purpose, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So if you had a condominium that didn't have a loan on it, and you wanted to take some equity out to buy a house or a teepee or go on a cruise or buy gold or whatever, you can do that.
All right. Thanks. We do have to
pull the Q&A now, but we have a large Q&A session at the end of the day, same as yesterday. So jot down your questions and we'll get them to Mark and Wyatt later on. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
We have a breakout room.